Welcome to Shanahan on Literacy, the site where we believe there is nothing more noble than to teach somebody to read. I'm Tim Shanahan, your host, and today we're going to talk about textbook reviews. There are a lot of folks out there who are reviewing textbooks and releasing criteria to help you to review textbooks, and I'm getting a lot of letters and phone calls about this one, so I thought we should talk about it. I start with a letter from a parent and a teacher and a link that I provide to an article that Natalie Wexler has published in Forbes magazine about all of this. And the parent question was this: our school district is using a program that has received many bad reviews, including by Ed Reports. We raised that with our school superintendent, and she indicated that Ed Reports is revamping its review process, so their evidence doesn't mean anything. What do you think? And the teacher asked, Ed Reports and Knowledge Matters campaign and others are requiring that high-quality texts build background knowledge. A good thing. However, they're expecting it to be through a topical approach, not a broader thematic approach. One curriculum that is touted as strong in this area addresses one topic for 18 weeks. So the question I'm asking is, what's the difference between a topical approach or a thematic approach, and which is preferred? Here's my response to these and many other questions. Over the past few weeks, I've been inundated by emails and phone calls about Ed Reports and a couple of other textbook review protocols, those issued by Knowledge Matters Campaign and Reading League. I usually stay away from this kind of topic since I help design commercial programs and try to avoid conflicts of interest. At this point, the problems with these reviews have gotten so broad and so general that I can discuss them without any danger of conflict. I've noticed 6 problems with these reviews and have suggested solutions to each here. Number 1, educators are placing way too much trust in these reviews. These review processes have been undertaken by groups who want to make sure that curriculum materials are up to snuff. But what that means differs from review process to review process. Each review organization has different beliefs, goals, and methodologies. Accordingly, reliance upon any one of these reviews may be misleading. The federal government requires nonprofits to file 990 forms. These forms require a declaration of purposes and descriptions of their activities. For instance, the Reading League says that it encourages, quote, evidence-aligned instruction to improve literacy outcomes. And Ed Reports aims to provide, quote, evidence-based reviews of instructional material. The Knowledge Matters campaign is a bit different. They're not a freestanding entity, but part of another nonprofit, Standards Work. And in their 990, Knowledge Matters campaign is described as an advocacy effort that showcases high-quality, knowledge-building curriculum. There's nothing wrong with advocating for favorite commercial programs. That just isn't the best basis for providing objective reviews or sound review tools. They can provide such reviews, but I think their documents should transparently state those prior commitments. One can only wonder about a review process that starts with the programs they like and then subsequently formulates review criteria based on that. The Reading League and Ed Reports both explicitly claim to support evidence-aligned curricula. This is a bit of a shift for Ed Reports, since originally its goal was to ensure alignment with the Common Core state standards. Knowledge Matters campaign doesn't seem to make that the same evidence-based assertion, though their review protocol mimics the others in how it uses research citations. The point here is that these kinds of reviews often have other motives that are different than those of the educators who are going to use them. Unless you can be certain of their motives, both in terms of declared purposes and in their alignment with their claims, buyers beware. It's one thing to try to ensure that school practices are in accord with what we know. It's quite another to establish review criteria based on other considerations, no matter how well-meaning those considerations may be. All these reviews are spotty at best when it comes to this alignment, so I would discourage curriculum selection processes that depend entirely or mainly on any one of these reviews. I wouldn't ignore them. I would just independently verify each demerit they assign, including determining whether that criterion even matters. A cool thing that the Reading League does is that it shares the publisher's responses to their red flag warnings. That kind of transparency is good because it should help school districts to consider both sides of an issue. For instance, in a program I'm involved in, Reading League flagged a particular practice their reviewers didn't like. The fact that this device was in 3 lessons out of about 900 in the program, or that we could provide substantial research support for the specific practice, made no difference to them. In such instances, having both the reviewer claim and the publisher response should help districts to examine such issues and to decide for themselves if that's really a problem or a big enough problem to matter. That's how it should work. When districts surrender all judgments to these organizations, refusing to consider or purchase any program that gets dinged no matter the evidence, then the game is lost. Instead of getting the best programs available, schools will end up with programs that best meet some group's ideological positions. Number 2, what constitutes evidence? Despite the rhetoric of these groups, the term evidence-aligned is meaningless. Often there is no direct evidence that what is being required has ever benefited children's learning in a research study. By contrast, the National Reading Panel and the What Works Clearinghouse have required, before they'll say anything works, that studies have directly evaluated the effectiveness of that something and found it to be advantageous to learners. The review documents cite research studies for each criterion. This may seem convincing to some district administrators. However, if you look more closely, you'll find that the evidence is woefully uneven. In some cases, the research is substantial. In others, there's no direct evidence, only poorly controlled correlational studies or evidence that a particular topic is important, but with no proof about how pedagogy might best address that important issue. I wish they'd all take the approach that What Works Clearinghouse takes. The Clearinghouse allows their guest experts to make any claims they want to, but then it checks out the nature and quality of the evidence supporting those claims. Their reports tell you what the experts say, but then report how strong that case is in terms of actual research support. That kind of reporting would allow districts to know that the phonics requirements for grades K-2 were supported by substantial research, but that the phonics claims for the upper grades are proffered with little evidence. What Works would allow the encouragement of decodable text and of favored approaches to teaching background knowledge, but they would then require an admission that those criteria are not really evidence-aligned. Sadly, too many district administrators assume that the opposite must be true. They're wrong. These reviews adopt review criteria and then seek any kind of evidence to support those choices, no matter how unconvincing and uneven that evidence may be. Number 3, grain size problems. Not all the criteria included in these reviews appear to be of equal importance. For example, the Reading League requires that reading programs require both explicit teaching of phonics and handwriting. Program that lacks either can be smacked for the omission, and some districts, by policy, will then prohibit the consideration of such programs. Now, don't get me wrong, it makes sense for schools to explicitly teach both phonics and handwriting. Core reading programs should include phonics, given that such instruction contributes fundamentally to early reading development. And it seems prudent to align the decoding lessons with the rest of the program, though admittedly there's no direct research evidence supporting that concern. The benefits of teaching handwriting, however, do not accrue directly to reading, and I'm aware of no data that shows either necessity or benefit of aligning such instruction with the rest of the reading lessons. It would not be perverse for a district to purchase separate reading and handwriting programs. To me, these criteria are not equivalent. A low mark in one should be a real concern. A low mark in the other may be informative, but it should not be determinative. There are many such false equivalences throughout these evaluation schemes. Some criteria flag essentials, and some could safely be ignored. Number 4, measurement problems. Even when a criterion is spot on, one might wonder about how to determine if that criterion has been sufficiently addressed. Knowledge Matters campaign encourages the teaching of comprehension strategies. reasonable thing to do, given the extensive research supporting their benefits. And yet, how much strategy teaching will be sufficient to meet the standard? It's easy to see how two well-meaning and careful reviewers could disagree about an issue like that. The teacher letter included above points out a reading program that devotes 18 weeks to one content topic. Such a program would surely meet the Knowledge Matters campaign criteria, though to me that sounds like overkill, certainly not something that possesses research support. If I reviewed it, I'd be critical that the program is too narrow and in focus, while other reviewers might conclude that it addresses the knowledge-building criteria appropriately. The more specific the review criteria are, the more reliable should be the reviews. However, the more specific they are, the harder it is to justify them given the nature of the research findings. For me, I'd prefer that everyone has all the information available. And here is an imaginary review and what it maybe should sound like in this case. We reviewed this program and judged that it met our knowledge building criteria. That's a plus. However, it is so narrowly focused that we wondered if that is best, and we know of no direct research evidence on this matter. Students taught from this program are likely to know more about electricity than any group of fourth graders in the history of mankind. If they are ever again asked to read about electricity, they will likely achieve the highest reading comprehension ever recorded, if they do not run screaming from the testing room. There's a body of research on sentries and their ability to protect military installations. Now, stay with me here. I know that sounds like I'm far off, but these studies of sentries find that the more specific and exacting the criteria for entering a camp and making sure that somebody knows the password, for instance, the more likely that the friendly troops will get shot. Now, let me say that again. The more specific and exacting the criteria for getting into the camp, the more likely you're going to shoot somebody on your team who, frankly, forgot the password or remembered yesterday's password or something. The more liberal the entry procedures, the more likely an enemy will gain entrance. The Knowledge Matters campaign criteria look to me to be the most general, and the Reading League ones seem the most specific. That probably means that if you go with one, you'll be more likely to reject sound programs, and with the other, weaker programs may sneak through. Ed Report seems to be someplace in the middle here. My preference would be for districts to appreciate the limitations of these reviews. That doesn't mean ignoring them, but considering their claims with the same gimlet eye that should be used with any of the claims made for the commercial programs. Do they just say there's a problem? Or do they specifically document their concerns? Perhaps like this. We did not think programs should include lessons that encourage this or that kind of activity. We reviewed 6 grade levels of this program and found it included 420 fluency lessons. It earned a demerit because twice in the second grade program, it encouraged the this or that activity. That way, a district could decide whether such an inclusion mattered much to them, either in terms of how serious the infraction or its extent. It would also be good if the producer of that curriculum weighed in to either admit they screwed up or to defend their approach. By reporting not just that there was an infraction to the review criteria, but the extent of the problem, districts would better be able to use the reviews appropriately. Number 5, effectiveness versus potential effectiveness. Product reviews don't tell us what works in terms of improving reading achievement. No, they only reveal the degree to which a program's design is consistent with research, standards, or someone's ideology. The National Reading Panel reported that fluency instruction in grades 1 through 4 and with struggling readers 1 through 9 improved reading achievement. These program reviews all require that programs address fluency, and in some cases, they even specify some preferred details about that instruction. The idea is that a program that includes fluency teaching, like the fluency teaching delivered in the studies, is going to be advantageous. That's a hope and not a fact, because most core programs have no data showing that their fluency lessons boost reading achievement. We are aiming for a possibility here. The idea is that when research proves that an approach can be effective, we should encourage schools to replicate that instruction in the hopes that they will obtain the same results. This is nothing like the standards that we have for medical and pharmacological research. they must show that their version of a treatment works. It's not enough to show that they're trying to do something like what has worked elsewhere. This is an important distinction. The Bookworms program apparently received low reviews from Ed Reports, despite having rigorous refereed research studies showing its actual effectiveness. Not that it was designed to look like what was done in the studies, but that its design really did pay off in more student learning. I'm flabbergasted that Ed Reports and the other reviews don't leave themselves an out here. If there's sound, high-quality research showing the effectiveness of a specific program, who cares whether it matches your predictive review criteria? Program A looks like the research. Program B doesn't look as much like the research, but it's very effective in teaching children. The review agency should have a provision saying that they will give an automatic pass to any program with solid direct research support concerning its actual effectiveness. I'd still review their program. However, my purpose here would be to try to figure out how a program that failed to meet my criteria did so well. Perhaps the reviews were sloppy, which might require more rigorous training of our reviewers. Another possibility is that the criteria themselves may be the problem. Maybe some of those non-negotiables should be a lot more negotiable after all. Number 6, usability. I'm a bit thrown by the usability requirements in some of these reviews. I agree with them in one sense. If teachers struggle to use a program, then it's unlikely to be effective no matter what non-negotiables it addresses or includes. However, I know of no research that can be used as the basis of evaluating usability, so that what constituted is more of an act of reason than of evidence alignment. Knowledge Matters campaign wants programs to include not just what it is that teachers are supposed to do, but explanations for why those things should be done. I love that, but have no idea whether that would improve practice. I think the reason for this emphasis on usability may come from the fidelity evaluations that are now common in instructional research studies. Researchers, to ensure that it is their instruction that is making the difference, do many things to try to guarantee fidelity to their plan. This includes teaching the lessons themselves, or using video teachers, scripting the lessons, or observing their delivery, and so on. That kind of thing makes great sense in a 12-week research study which didn't include any second language students or kids below the 40th percentile and was only taught to children whose parents granted approval. It's a lot harder to argue for, especially narrow, prescriptive, non-adjustable approaches, lessons aimed at making certain that teachers don't screw it up by varying from what it says in the teacher's guide, in real classrooms. The idea of teaching everyone the same lesson no matter what they already know may make sense to some reading advocates. Nevertheless, it's a lousy idea for kids and reading achievement, and it runs counter to the research. Many districts and their selection procedures require tryouts of new programs, or at least they used to. Some of their teachers try to deliver the lessons for several weeks to see how workable the product may be. This makes a lot more sense to me than the armchair usability criteria in these reviews. Again, districts make a big mistake in ceding their responsibility to these reviews. Some things should be done carefully in-house. So what are the big takeaways here? Well, one, the development of commercial programs for teaching reading are serious endeavors that can provide valuable supports for teachers. However, such program designs are fallible. They require the contributions of dozens, perhaps hundreds of people whose knowledge and efforts can range greatly. It's sensible for districts to purchase such programs and essential that they take great care in this to try to end up with supports that really help teachers and students to succeed. Number 2, there are benefits to having third-party reviews of these kinds of programs, both by government agencies such as the What Works Clearinghouse and by nonprofits that are not commercially entangled with the corporations that sell these programs. These external reviews can warn consumers, the school districts, of egregious problems, and they can push publishers to do better. 3, these kinds of reviews are likely to be most useful when they depend substantially on high-quality research, approving programs that have been proven to provide learning advantages to students, and encouraging the close alignment of programs with existing research data. 4. Just as school districts need to be skeptical of undocumented claims of commercial companies, the folks who sell the programs, they must be just as skeptical of the claims of those who critique them. The more transparent, specific, and well-documented these critiques, the better. Districts should be wary of simply accepting any negative judgments by reviewers, requiring evidence that the criteria are truly essential to quality and that research really rejects what a program is doing. And 5, districts should adopt sound procedures for choosing programs. These procedures should include considerations of these reviews. However, no district should adopt policies that automatically accept or reject programs based on these reviews. And that concludes what I have to say about textbook reviewing. I certainly hope that there's something in there that will be helpful to you and your school districts. If you go to the Shanahan on Literacy website, you can download a written copy of this presentation. It goes under the title of What About the Textbook Reviews? It is on May 11th, 2024 on the Shanahan on Literacy site. It includes both everything that I said, a link to that Natalie Wexler article that I noted at the beginning, and it also has links to all of these 4 review groups, to Ed Reports, to Knowledge Matters Campaign, The Reading League, and What Works Clearinghouse. With that, I'm going to thank Greg Johnson, our sound engineer, and I'm going to thank you for joining us. I hope to see you up the road a piece.